Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast where we whine and fret over how long it will be before the mighty Doom Patrol get their own comic again.
We may talk about other comics and stuff as well, so settle in, pull up a chair, and snuggle in for episode 9.
If you're down by the waterfront, you could pull up a bollard. It's entirely up to you. Anyway, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, and you can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFDpod, and you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com.
And I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve, and you can also find us on Facebook, and our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
This week, we're going back again to the early days of the Doom Patrol with Volume 1, Issues 86 to 90, 1960s Doom Patrolling at its most vivid and visceral. And of course, after that, we'll loosen the drawstring and dive deep into the mailbag for your responses to our question of the week, which was, who's your favourite team of villains? Ooh. But first, Mike, let me tell you, it's been a crazy week.
Has it?
Yeah. My wife has a good friend called Tracy, and Tracy was on holidays last week at Hamilton Island.
Ooh.
Lovely for her.
Yes.
Yes. And she was sitting in a restaurant with her friend, and they were having a nice dinner. Mm-hmm. And at a table at the back, there's about six blokes having dinner.
Okay.
And they were looking at them and going, hang on, is that? And then they took a photo of the table from a distance, and then she sent it to her son and said, do you think that's One Direction at the table? And her son said, I can't see. You need to get a closer photo. And so one of the guys from the table walked past, and she took another photo, and her friend took a photo, but her phone wasn't on silent, so it made the, you know, camera shutter noise. And he turned around and went, if you're going to take a sneaky photo, you've got to turn off the sound. And then a few minutes later, he came back, and she said, oi, come over here. And he came over, and she said, are you in One Direction? He went, yeah. She said, can I get a photo with you? And he went, sure. So he crouched down next to them, and it was Louis from One Direction, apparently, and Zayn was there as well.
Wow.
And she got a photo taken with them. And then they finished their meal. He went back to his table. Everything was cool. And then at the end of the night, one of his handlers came up and said, look, do you mind? No one in the world knows they're here. Would you mind not putting this on social media until tomorrow when they're leaving, because they're leaving in the morning? She went, yeah, okay. So she'd already sent the photo to her son and said, don't put it on anything. You can't do it till the morning. And her son, Bailey, agreed. Anyway, the next day they're sitting at the airport, and this is on Friday when mm-hmm. all the storm and cyclone stuff's hitting Queensland.
When you mentioned the location they were in, I thought, yeah, we had a cyclone up there real recently. Yeah. Anyway.
So the airport's opening and shutting and no one's sure if anyone's getting out or has gotten out. And she gets a phone call from a friend of hers saying, have you seen the front page of 9MSN?
Oh, no.
And she opened it up, and she's on the front page of 9MSN with a story about how members of One Direction are stranded in a cyclone and fans are fearful for their safety. And her son, who has a little Facebook account, a little Twitter account, had 1.6 million likes on his story on Facebook.
Holy jeez.
Do you want to hear the end of the story?
Go for it.
She put the dress that she was wearing on eBay.
No.
And she sold it for $4,000 today.
Shit. That's insane, but that's a great bit of luck for her.
Oh dear.
This dress was in the presence of 1D.
Yeah. So Daily Bailey, which is her son's account, is very popular. I think he shut his Twitter now because it just got bombarded with death threats because his mum touched Louis.
Oh, God. From angry young ladies, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
How dare she go near 1D? How dare she?
Yeah. Wow. So, not really comic related, but interesting story.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Holy geez.
How about you, mate?
I don't have a lot to report back on this week in comics. Comics came, they were good, they were fine. There was a good issue of Gru, Friends and Foes, and a really good issue of Sensation Comics featuring Wonder Woman and Justice League, which also focused on Wonder Woman. Don't ask me how Wonder Woman's own book's going anymore, because I don't read it. But we should also follow up on last episode with our casting.
We're a casting, film. Yeah.
Because I think the numbers are pretty much locked in now.
Yep.
So I'll just go through the cast. As
this is from PricewaterhouseCoopers. They're doing the results for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, from them and our listeners, what listened in last time, and retweeted or faved their choice from our options. So the Chief is going to be played by John Noble.
Hey, good choice, Mike.
Yes, Doom Patrol will be Bradley Cooper. Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol. He is versatile. He could play the entire team.
Oh, dear, did I just grudge a nunt again? No, Robot Man will be played by Bradley Cooper.
Right.
So that was...
That's two to you, Mike.
That's two to me. You'll be happy to know that Olivia Wilde will be Elastigirl.
That was a landslide, that one.
That was indeed a landslide, as was... Neil Patrick Harris for Negative Man.
The Falling Down stuff.
Yeah.
Did you see him in the Oscars?
I saw a little
down there.
Yeah. We then had Emily Blunt was the choice for Crazy Jane.
Ooh.
And another landslide was Mekhi Phifer for Joshua Clay, a.k.a. Tempest.
Yeah, I may not have picked as well as you there.
Maybe not. But then again, you did well with Olivia Wilde, if you pardon the expression. then for Dorothy, we had, this one was close. We ended up choosing, Emma Watson for Dorothy. There was only one vote in it.
Wow.
Her and Abigail Breslin.
Mm.
Then for Mr. Nobody, another bit of a landslide, went to Jim Carrey for that role. And
90s Jim Carrey, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'm not bitter.
Not at all. And then General Immortus is going to be Harry Dean Stanton.
Yay.
So I think we both fared pretty well there.
Yeah, I think so.
Good work, Paul. Good work.
Between the two of us, we could cast a movie.
And we just did. So, yes.
Go us. Hells to the yeah. We're more awesome than an awesome possum.
Yes.
Oh, is that a ticking that I hear?
That is indeed a ticking. I think it's a doom clock. So, this week on the doom clock, unsurprisingly, the numbers have not changed. The last book that the team appeared in was issue 22 of volume 5, which came out in July 2011. So, just over 3.5 years since their own title. Their last appearance was back in October of 2014, so still just over 4 months. So, fingers crossed, we might see something after Convergence. Who knows? Mm. But this week in Doom Patrol history, we had issue number 9 of volume 2 went on sale in 1988 for the princely sum of 75 US cents. Do you mind?
Oh.
And it was the first appearance in that era of Gargoax, the alien conqueror, or would-be conqueror, and his android plastic men. They were attempting to steal missiles from a nuclear missile silo, and of course were confronted by the patrol. And this issue also had a very, well, quote-unquote cheery backup story featuring Arani spending some quality time with a wheelchair-bound woman who was dying.
Yes. I love the plastic men. They're different colors depending on their powers. It's
yes.
Easy to for Gargoax to sort them. They're just like figures from a game.
The Garg-wax. Blue ones over there? Yeah.
Gargoax.
The pink ones there. Good old Gargoax. We'll get to him one day. I'm sure people are going, who the hell's Gargoax?
Is that, isn't Garvey is no relation to Gargoax, is it?
It could be a very distant translation from his galaxy, maybe. Are you saying I'm fat and green?
No. Okay. Thought you might have a bit of alien tyrant in you.
Oh,
Fast.
And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
For our beloved Doomsplaining segment this week, we're going back to the glorious early days of Doom, following up from episode number 5. We're looking at the next few issues of the Doom Patrol adventures in issues 86 through to issue 90.
And in fact, these are extra special because this was the first time their book was actually called Doom Patrol, which was a change from its original title of My Greatest Adventure.
Yes. So issue 86 is the first ever issue of the Doom Patrol.
Hooray!
Hey!
And what a great kickoff. I actually have to give a shout out to the cover artist for these issues as well. Kind of the unsung hero of the original Doom Patrol series, Bob Brown. The art for all the covers of this that we're talking about in this episode. And just some really awesome line work from Bob.
Bob Brown, yeah, nice stuff.
Mm.
He does a good gorilla. So this first issue, 86, is called The Brotherhood of Evil.
And who gets introduced in that story, Paul?
I'm not sure. I'll have to read it again.
It wasn't the League of Challenger Haters, was it?
No. How are they going? Are they still having meetings?
I have no idea.
Excellent. No, mm-hmm. It's the first appearance of the Brotherhood of Evil.
Mm.
And it's a tryout episode. So, you've got someone trying to join the Brotherhood of Evil. What a great way to introduce them.
And what a great way to try and join the gang as well.
Yeah.
Stealing a giant robot and threatening to steal the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Now, in this story, there's a robot that the chief built for space exploration.
Something like that.
But it's piloted. It's got a guy in the glass dome of the head. That...
I question the roboticness of Rog. I don't even like the name Rog.
Rog the robot. It's not really a robot if there's someone sitting in your head piling it. You're a Jaeger.
Yes. Yeah. He was the pre-Jaeger Jaeger.
Yeah. And the chief, I don't know what the chief was thinking, because when he designed Rog, he put fangs on him, as you need on most exploration robots.
That's to scare off any nasty aliens, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it's not all robot fighting. There's a birthday in this issue, isn't there?
There is indeed.
Ah. Yes, it's the chief's birthday, and it's celebrating this. Well, is it?
Possibly.
Is the chief a pathological liar?
Well, I think it's more that he's just never told them. And so the team decides to throw him a birthday anyway because, gosh, they really like the chief.
Yeah. He's the best leader of the Doom Patrol ever at this point.
Yes. And he does even get a bit teary because, yes, he's actually having a quiet moment of reflection, and he admits to himself in a thought bubble that today is his birthday indeed. So somehow the gang got it right.
Wow. Coincidence? Can't beat that. Anyway, it's not all birthday celebrations. There's a giant robot attacking a bridge.
Yep.
It's Rog, and it's pilot. Who's piloting Rog?
Mr. Morden. Mm.
Yes. And what do we know about Mr. Morden at this point?
Well, we know nothing other than that he is piloting Rog, and, you know, the reasons he's piloting it soon become apparent when we cut away to an exclusive girls' school in Paris, of all places. Because that just makes so much sense.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Paris. Yes, and this is where we see another member of the Brotherhood of Evil, who is Madame Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find it a bit creepy that what I'm assuming is the headquarters of the Brotherhood of Evil is hidden inside this exclusive girls' school in Paris.
Yeah.
I mean, what would happen if one of the students saw Monsieur Mella wandering around the halls?
Wow. We do get weird types in private schools in Australia, so.
Hey now.
As the inquiries have shown.
Anyway, yes, this is the point where Morden is introduced to the rest of the Brotherhood, and they basically, well, the Brain basically says, you know, you did pretty well with stealing Rog, the giant quote-unquote robot, and, you know, join us.
Yeah, and this is Rog, who's just made it from America over to Paris.
Yeah.
In a giant robot without the Doom Patrol catching up.
There is a panel later on that shows Rog kind of water skiing on two giant motorboats. So maybe that's how he did it.
Yes, and we meet the leader of the Brotherhood of Evil, which is a brain in a jar whose name is
The Brain.
The Brain. Ambiguous.
Not really.
But just in this, he's just a brain in a jar with a few wires connected and a little radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is pretty good for back in the day. So, yeah. It's an interesting start to this team of villains, sort of them lurking in the shadows and saying, yeah, we're going to get the Chief and his precious Doom Patrol. You're gonna tempt them out by stealing the Statue of Liberty. And then there's a fight scene with Rog the giant robot and Elastigirl as she goes, you know, full size and picks Rog up.
Yeah.
Holding him, well, it above her head. That's just an awesome scene.
Yeah, that's awesome. And this is all in front of the Statue of Liberty.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic stuff. Yeah. And that's the end of the issue. But there's a little bit of a mystery at the end about Larry. Larry probably overexerted himself, and Rita's a bit worried about him.
See, I've said this before. There was always kind of a hint that there may have been something between Larry and Rita. A
little bit of sexual tension.
Ooh, oh, my.
A little bit of Days of Our Lives. Yeah, but Larry's basically saying, she can't come into my room. I have a horrible secret. And if she saw it, she would run for her life.
Oh, dear. Which leads us into issue 87.
Yeah.
Titled The Terrible Secret of Negative Man. This one has a bit of a love triangle almost.
Yeah.
With Larry hanging out with Mademoiselle Soulette. It's a bit of a strange coincidence that a French woman showed up after we've just seen another French woman.
No, that's unrelated. Yes, but she starts flirting a bit with Larry.
Doesn't Rita get a bit jealous?
Yeah, Rita does. And, you know, she kisses Larry on the bandages, which must be very nice. Yeah, but there's only a couple of pages of that before you see that it's really Madame Rouge. She's in touch with the Brain, and they're manipulating Negative Man to steal something for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a weird time capsule which is engraved on it that was buried in 1950, and she, as her alter ego, Mademoiselle Soulette, gives him a special miniature camera, which somehow the Negative Man being is able to make that go through the wall of this giant time capsule as well.
Don't think about it. Science. It's all good.
Okay. All right. Comic book science, of course. From the 60s. 60s comic book science, of course.
Yeah. So, the negative spirit flies in and takes a photo of some of the plans that are hidden in that capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's the Brotherhood of Evil have their hands on those plans now. And it's about blowing things up into larger sizes. So they get to work with toy tanks and they're expanding them to make them giant and toy soldiers, and they're magnifying all sorts of things. And we meet another member of the Brotherhood of Evil at this point who is a midget.
I'm not laughing because he's a midget. I'm laughing because when he's introduced, he's kind of doing a disguised meetup.
He's dressed as a little girl.
He's dressed as a little girl, skipping along and singing this song with the code phrase "Death to the Chief" as one of the lyrics. And then, you know, Mademoiselle Soulette goes, "Ah, you know, you are not a child, but Giacomo, the midget. And that's just one of the most ridiculous scenes I've ever seen.
And his powers are, he's a master of disguise.
Well, a master. The thing is, we never see Giacomo ever again after this issue.
Is that it?
That's it.
Wow.
Never again.
That's awesome.
So I think they must have had the theme of small objects and people on their minds when they did this, because they've got miniature toys, which they're enlarging. They've got Giacomo, the midget. And yeah, it's very odd.
Yeah.
And Giacomo turns up and goes, aha, I will take you to the brain now that, you know, we've made contact, and we will continue on with our plan with this enlarging laser beam thing.
And it ends up with an attack on a gold repository.
Of course.
So I'm guessing this came out shortly after Goldfinger.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fort Knox and all that. Sounds legit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'd rate that.
Mid-60s? Anyway. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and so there's toy tanks getting blown up and crashing through the walls, and it's called Project Midas. That's the brain's plan.
Mm.
Toy soldiers, which expand and kind of walk around and carry guns. I don't get that. Yeah, and they're talking $20 million in cash, the biggest, most fantastic haul in history.
Wow.
Now, I rate that because in a lot of old things they say, you know, we will do this for $600,000, and everyone goes, but $20 million is actually still a bit of money these days.
Yes, $20 million back in those days. Holy geez.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I wouldn't turn my nose up to $20
million. No. No one would. Not even today. But yes, we do get another appearance by Giacomo on the next page, though. And then I think that's his last appearance ever.
Oh.
Poor Giacomo.
We hardly got to know him.
I know.
That is a story that needs to be written, is what happened to Giacomo and bringing him back.
We'll start a fan campaign. Look, if people can do fan campaigns getting Taylor Swift to be Spider-Gwen, we can do one for the return of Giacomo.
You should at least get a villain's one-shot.
Yeah.
With a hologram cover. That'd be nice.
Yes. Anyway, it's then revealed that Negative Man decides that his radioactivity is probably going to be the only way they can stop these enlarged toy soldiers and tanks. And so that's when he has to reveal his horrible secret and take off his bandages and show his gruesome face. Ugh.
He's a bit fugly.
I think I found our episode title. Just make a note of that. Okay, there we go. But yes, thankfully, Negman saves the day by unleashing the radioactive energy, which is normally blocked off by his specially treated bandages, and he saves the day.
And he blocks the radio signals to all the remote control stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Rita does a classic Rita thing. She rips the tank apart.
Yep.
Rita's the best.
She's so angry, but she, you know, she uses it to good effect.
Yeah. Larry falls over.
That's what he does best.
Yeah.
But also in this issue, that pretty much wraps up the main storyline there. And then we have a back issue story about Robot Man fighting alone. There's this, and there's another backup story. The Rita one, which kind of seemed to be focusing on the after effects of war. Like real-world war. Like this one's set on an island that apparently was the site of one of the battles in the Pacific in World War II. I probably should have looked up whether Sutu Island's a real place. But anyway.
No, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Comic book science. Like Paris.
Yeah. What a weird place. But this story has the chief sending Robot Man off to find an escaped killer who's eluded the police and has decided to go hiding on this island. And it's essentially Robot Man tracking down this killer and literally falling to pieces as he does so.
Setting off every single booby trap the guy has set.
Yes.
One by one. And costing him a limb each time, basically.
Yep, pretty much.
How did the guy lift... He traps in a great big concrete dome. that he's pulled up with vines. How did he pull up a concrete dome with vines?
1960s comic book science.
1960s comic book science at its finest.
Yes. Yes. and then we move on to issue 88, in which we have finally the incredible origin of the Chief.
Yeah. And what a creepy bastard he is.
Look, it's all in the name of science, what he does. All in the name of 1960s comic book science.
All right, here's some Chief stuff. See if this is disturbing. Mm-hmm. The Chief is experimenting with making things live longer and etc. And what's step in that sort of process? You work out how to sew an extra a head onto a dog.
Yeah, that's a little bit weird.
There's a picture of a Doberman with a tiny little other dog, like a Dalmatian's head on the side of its neck.
And his logic for doing that is that by successfully transplanting the head of one dog onto the body of another, he will be able to replace sick organs with healthy ones. So does that mean that the smaller dog was sick?
I don't know.
I'm scared, Paul. I'm scared. We're getting into some dark territory here.
You wouldn't leave your dog with the Chief for long, would you?
You would not. But the thing is, he's getting paid to do this. And because he was kind of like a, you know, brilliant scientist who was sort of on tough times and was offered $2 million to do this research.
Yeah, he's got mysterious sponsorship, hasn't he?
Mm. I just love that when he gets this mysterious payment, he's so excited that he's listing off all the gear he can buy. And he's so hungry that he also exclaims that he can also buy 1,000 liverwurst sandwiches.
Yeah. This is while he's chucking the money in the air and dancing in a
monster. As you do. He's making it rain.
If I ever get a grant, I'll be doing that.
Yeah, and then he's also reanimating dead bunny rabbit.
Yeah. Couldn't he sew that to another animal?
Maybe he didn't have a second bunny. I don't know.
It's hard to find bunnies. They don't breed or anything.
Anyway, Paul, who are we soon shocked to see is his mysterious benefactor?
It's a creepy old man called General Immortus, the retired General Immortus. Ooh,
not that guy. He's the worst.
Yep. And the Chief finds this out and gets caught. Mm-hmm. And General Immortus said, I've been alive for centuries and I want to keep being alive for centuries. And so for that reason, I need you to come up with new... immortality serum for me.
Because he had a serum, but it appeared extremely difficult to replicate.
Yeah. So. Which is why all the dog experimenting to try and come up with a new solution.
Don't forget, 1960s comic book science.
Yes, and the Chief is horrified, even though he sews heads to dogs. And he said, I won't be a part of this sick behavior. And he gets knocked out and wakes up with a bomb inserted in his chest.
Yeah, that's one way to get someone to commit to something.
Yeah, the old bomb in the chest.
That old chestnut. Get it? Chestnut.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
But the Chief's not going to give up. He's thinking about it and he said, what's the best way to get out of having a bomb in your chest?
Well, if that bomb runs off the energy generated by your own body, then you just cut off that energy source.
Yeah, so he decides to crash through a plate glass window into General Mortis's bedroom.
Yep.
Holding a pipe the wrong way around, so it looks like a gun, hoping that General Immortus will shoot him in just enough way to hurt him so he can go die somewhere else, but not in the head at the point where he crashed through the window. So it's a great plan, and it actually works. And he's able to stagger away with his bullet wounds, stagger up to his building where he's got a robot who looks perpetually surprised who can operate on him.
Of course. Of course.
So he can actually die for a minute and get the bomb out. Actually, no, the bomb just windles, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I think there's some quote-unquote science logic there that because the energy signal has decayed, then so too has the bomb itself.
Yeah, and his robot's called RA2.
Which I believe stands for Robot Assistant 2.
Ah, right. I wonder what happened to Robot Assistant 1.
Sure.
Oh, that's another untold tale of the Doom Patrol.
RA1 and Giacomo, the midget.
Yeah, we've got a whole team of the forgotten characters of the Doom Patrol, haven't we?
But the cost of having this bomb removed from his chest is that the chief loses the use of his legs. And that's how he ends up in the wheelchair.
Get a real bad case of dead leg.
Really bad.
Yeah. And then he orders RA2 to smash the lab where the operation was done and to get rid of all the traces of the immortality serum.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shoots the robot in the head.
In the head, yes.
And said it's almost like killing a friend. This thing saved my life, but I have no choice.
Bang, bang.
Double head tap.
Yep.
Go the chief. He's a hard ass.
Gangster style. Holy shit. Yeah, so that was kind of a surprising origin for the chief. I like it better than the origin that John Byrne gave him when we looked at that era.
Well, this one's more realistic. But it does have a modern-day return of the General Immortus in disguise as a dude called the Baron.
Mm.
Yeah, and he's had a bit of prep time because Immortus has fought the Doom Patrol twice before, so this time he's ready.
Yes.
Yeah, so he disables Cliff, traps Negative Man, and tricks Rita into going small and trapping her in a jar.
That was kind of lame. Poor Rita. Anyway, yes, so it seems like this mysterious Baron has, you know, finally, you know, gotten one over on the Doom Patrol, but then he reveals it's a mask he's wearing, and it's General Immortus back once again.
Oh,
that guy.
That guy. Three appearances.
It's like their arch enemy or something.
Yeah. But the team through a number of machinations, well, the chief has a gun in his chair that he pops out. It's a flamethrower, isn't it? And he melts the chains off
Cliff.
And Cliff's able to free Negative Man. Negative Man's able to free Elastigirl. And Elastigirl grabs the train that General Immortus is escaping on, picks the entire train up, and then a rocket bursts out of the train. And then
I love 1960s comics. They're so wacky.
Yeah, if you hold a train upright in the air, a rocket will probably come out of it.
Whoosh.
But Negative Man goes after the rocket, he wraps himself around it, and it explodes. So I guess General Immortus is dead.
Probably. We'll probably never see him ever again.
Well, his, you know, living forever thing isn't really his thing, is it?
Spoilers.
Yeah. All right, next issue. We've sort of covered this, because this is the first appearance of Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has fantastic things like paramecium.
Yes.
Paramecium.
A gigantic single-celled organism.
That's my safe word now, paramecium.
Is it?
I told you that.
Anyway, yes. This is the former student of the chief's coming back under the guise of, you know, oh, look at me, I've got this great invention. Oh, but it's actually triggered this ability in me to change shape into anything I want. So... we did cover AVM Man back in episode 3, so go listen to that if you want to hear more awesomeness about Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man.
Yeah, but this has the Rita backup, doesn't it?
Where Rita's trying to rescue a
war vet and reunite him with his Korean adopted son.
Yes. Yeah. So, again, more fallout from real world wars. So it's interesting to see it. And how she has to actually go through, you know, actual filing cabinets to find stuff rather than, you know, it having a computer listing somewhere. It's weird how sometimes I'll have these fantastic computers and inventions, but then occasionally it'll become really embedded in the real world. So
You get the impression that someone did have sympathy for people from the war and orphans and, you know. Yeah, there's a bit going on there behind the scenes in someone's head, which is I appreciate.
It is nice to see a book that gets a little bit fantastical, like the Doom Patrol, occasionally deal with real-world stuff.
Yeah, it's not all paramesiums.
No, it's not.
The final issue we're looking at is called Issue 90, The Enemy Within the Doom Patrol. And this is about paranoia and mistrust in amongst the team.
It's also about Elastigirl getting to sit in the lion enclosure in a zoo.
That's how she chills out. She goes off and spends time with nature, which I'm going to sit in the lion enclosure and let all the big cats climb on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
As you do.
Yeah. This is also the return of the Brotherhood of Evil. So there's a real nice progression in these issues. We get their debut. We get their second adventure where Madame Rouge is trying to trick the Doom Patrol. And now we get their latest evil scheme where Madame Rouge gets superpowers.
Mm. Unfortunately, there's no Giacomo the Midget, but...
He's gone.
He's gone.
Laid off.
He wasn't worthy of being in the Brotherhood.
Yeah, imagine that. Giacomo, could you come to the office for a minute? Look, the economy, we're downsizing.
We can't afford to keep renting out that costume of you as a little girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, this is really cool to see Madame Rouge sort of go through her transformation process. Like when she's sitting down at her nightstand and looking in the mirror and, you know, touching up her face to make herself look exactly like Robot Man. That was cool.
Yeah, and she can shape her skin like clay.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. So they go on an adventure saving trapped miners, and there's more shenanigans that seem to run foul of the team. And yeah, there's this sense of paranoia throughout it.
Shaping her face like clay. You could imagine a bit of a, you know, Patrick Swayze ghost type scene with her. Or maybe it's only me. Maybe I'm the only one who imagines that. Anyway, moving on.
Yes, but then there's the old trick of, you know, the chief's given each of them a different code word so that they can try and figure out who the traitor is within the team. And, yeah, it's not who they think it is.
No. Shenanigans. If you've seen that DC Nation animated short, you've had a little preview of this one.
Back in episode 2, yes. One of the
back
DC
in the
Nation
early days.
When we were young. When we were young. All the way back in January. Oh, what an era.
Now, I've got to give a shout out to there's a page where Madame Rouge is disguising herself as Robot Man, and she does this in her lovely, sexy outfit. She turns her head into Robot Man's head. So there's like a drag Robot Man. It's great.
Yeah, it's a frocked up Robot Man. Looks of it. But yes, it turns out that she had ended up disguising herself as the chief all along. And suddenly the team realize her treachery and try and take care of her the only way they know how, which is by beating her up.
Doom Patrol style.
Yep. Yeah. So, unfortunately, she gets away, and the team discover that the chief's been locked away in a cupboard somewhere within their mansion, and they all, you know... They all make up and become friends again at the end of the day. But out there somewhere, the Brotherhood are still lurking and scheming. And the Brain is saying to them, you know, you didn't fail us, Madame Rouge. You know, we've still got time to perfect your superpowers. And we will destroy the Doom Patrol. We will, my friends. We will.
Yeah.
So he's persistent.
Yeah. So great stuff, these issues. Yeah. I mean, they do actually all link together, and you get they're all basically about the Brotherhood of Evil, except for the Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man one.
Imagine if he had joined the Brotherhood.
I don't know why he didn't. He's a natural. They had that opening from the Giacomo firing.
Tell you what, he's a lot more threatening than Giacomo.
He is.
Giacomo just dresses up like a little girl and skips around. Sinking.
His power set is much more versatile. Fantastic.
But yes, I agree. Yes, this is a great introduction to essentially their arch nemesis.
Their opposing number, their Moriartys.
Yes, that'll do. That'll do nicely.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, well, that's it for Doomsplaining this week. Time now for the Mailbag of Doom segment, and we're looking at all your responses to the question of the week, which was, who's your favourite team of villains? Oh, let's look at the answers here. Okay. Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, to his friends. No, his enemies. I don't know. He said his favourite team of villains was the Superior Foes of Spider-Man. They are a good bunch of villains. Oh. They're funny. They interact. They double-cross. They're great.
We also heard from Sergeant Merica, who is at SGTMERICA on the Twitters.
Sergeant Merica.
Sergeant Merica. The Sergeant said, Dark Avengers, bad guys as heroes is always a book he would pick up.
Excellent. Karthik Karkarella, he said the Dark Judges from Judge Dredd. Mm. Ooh, that's a very formidable team, those.
Yes.
Ones. Judge Death.
I remember being very young and seeing Judge Death for the first time and freaking out.
Yeah. He is a scary bastard.
Shmoby One wrote in and said, it's an easy one this week, Wilfred. The Rogues from Flash.
Yeah. Who's your favourite rogue, maybe? He's not answering. He's not here.
He's not?
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Ange.
Dr. Ange. He's the man.
He said, I love the Fatal Five of the Legion. Far and away my favourite villain team. You a Fatal Five guy, Mike?
I must say my knowledge of the Legion is fairly lacking.
Oh, really?
And I will have to, at some stage in my copious free time, catch up on the Legion.
Now, the Fatal Five, I know about them. I've read some stories. They're made up of the Emerald Empress, who has the Evil Eye of Ekron, which is a giant eye that sort of hovers around with her. Mm-hmm. Mm? Yeah.
Okay.
A guy called Mano, who had Death Touch powers.
Ooh.
Who destroyed his own planet with his Death Touch powers. He's that bad. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Mano. He probably has awesome answering machine messages. A guy called the Persuader.
Ooh, what does he do?
His main method of persuading seems to be having a giant axe.
That'll do it.
But, I mean, he's probably the guy on the team who always makes them go to the restaurant he wants to go to and watch the movie he wants to watch because he's the Persuader. That's a big axe.
Guess.
Yeah. There's Tharok, who's half man, half robot, literally right down the middle.
Ooh.
So one half of his body on the left is all robotic and the other half is, person.
Right.
Yeah, practical. Yeah, he was the leader. And Validus, who's like a giant glass brain thing, sort of baby monster thing that I think Tharok controls.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a backstory behind that, but I won't spoil it because I'd be talking about people you've never read about. So.
Yes. That wouldn't
anyway,
be weird. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure we don't have anyone listening to this show that's not experiencing that.
Enough about the Fatal Five, or is it?
Well, Martin Gray, who's at Mart Gray, he also said he was a fan of the Fatal Five from the Legion. He had a fondness for the Legion's Empress, back when I this and I that with the word E-Y-E was original and relevant.
Yeah, and Dr. Ange replied and said, so good, and a good match for the Legion from a power level, plus Validus and his eventual backstory, which we won't go into now.
Mm.
We'll do the Validus podcast in the future.
Oh, great. Honey, I have to go buy more comics.
Okay, we also heard from Richie O'Hara Beamond. And he said, ooh, some great answers already. He's listening. And so as not to copy, I will go with the Angel Gang from 2000 AD.
Oh, yeah.
Who had an exquisite commitment to hats.
Mm.
Oh, the Angel Gang. There was Mean Machine Angel.
Yes.
And the others.
Yeah, it was all about Mean Machine.
Yeah. Mean Machine was the one. He had the dial on the forehead
yes.
and liked to headbutt people to death.
Yeah. We also heard from Grant Robinson, who at first suggested DC Editorial, and then said, nah, it's got to be the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
They were in the ambiguous group that you didn't know who they were or what they were about.
Yep.
We also heard from Reggie Hancock, who said, the Rogues, another vote for the Rogues.
Mm.
And we had one final response from Rift, who said, the crime syndicate of America was pretty cool, but for wacky hijinks, you can't go past Hordak and the Horde Empire from She-Ra. Ah. Ooh, Hordak and the Horde. Alliterative.
Who's your favourite team of villains, Paul?
I have to say the Suicide Squad, Mike. Mm-hmm. I have to say, and I'm talking about the 80s Suicide Squad.
Okay.
When Amanda Waller was big and the team was all skeevy, made up of C-listers. Captain Boomerang and chucking cream pies in people's faces.
Really?
You have to, oh, yeah, really. Wow. Now, there was this whole thing for like 40 issues. People kept getting hit in the face with cream pies. And no one ever knew who it was, but it was Captain Boomerang doing it because he was sneaky.
Really?
They just, when they discovered it was him, they just about killed him. Really.
Wow.
They dumped him on an island and left him there for months. But that team was awesome. That is, Suicide Squad was just the best book. And that's the best news about the Suicide Squad movie is they might reprint more of those Suicide Squad comics.
Oh.
And they're the good ones, not the current team. The current team is not the good ones. Just my opinion. It just happens to be correct. What about you, Mike?
My favourite team of villains, I'm going to say the Galactic Empire from Star Wars.
The Galactic Empire.
I mean, you've got the Emperor in the background pulling the strings, yep. Vader running around, and you've got endless hordes of stormtroopers, you know. And they're clearly not the good guys. I mean, look what happened to Alderaan, you know. Yeah. They're quite the villains.
Alderaan's a peaceful planet. They have no weapons.
Yeah, well, that'll learn them.
Yeah. That is a bigger villain team than the others that were mentioned.
Well,
well done, Mike.
Go hard or go home, really?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Mm.
Well, I think that's about all we've got time for this week.
Yes. Thanks for listening, guys. Again, our contact details. You can reach us and Wilfred on at WFDpod on Twitter. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we've also got the Waiting for Doom Facebook page.
And next week, we'll be returning to Grant Morrison for issues 24 to 26, which is just three issues that finish off the first trade paperback.
Yes.
If you haven't got the omnibus. yeah, but you'll see that new members join the team and bloody peril awaits.
Ooh.
Ooh. Hope the people listen to that ep.
It'll be as awesome as this one was. Is. Something
more awesome than an awesome possum.
Yes, on that note, thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
See ya.